snack, actually.
So, so Stephen, maybe we should get started with your updates, because I know the last couple of times we've been kind of focusing on what Ricardo is doing, so it would be good to talk about what you've been up to.
I've tried to do a C++ implementation. Mainly the only thing that's C++ is the set from the standard library.
Yeah.
And like I said, I get to a spot, I see whether or not it has a good reuse distance. So I have -1 for infinite and an actual number from 1 to whatever being it has a actual reuse distance.
Okay.
Then I simply start going through all of them. I'm sorry. I save the position that I'm at in the file from the beginning. I go until I find what I'm looking for, the same local block address, and I put them into a set while I'm doing that. And then at the end, I get the size of that set, +1 to include the local block address. And
logical, you mean the logical?
Logical, sorry. I always say local. And then I use the file pointer to go back to the same spot, but it should be the next line with that. And
I
so it
I
runs
understand the
roughly
goal, the goal of what you're doing.
For that one, that's getting the number of uniques between this point and that point.
Right. That's the reuse distance. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's calculating the reuse distance of a logical base address. So
logical block address.
Logical block address, sorry.
You guys need to wake up a little earlier.
So there's you have this logical block address, and then you're looking for the same one that's in the future. So he reads the file or the structure that he's using until he finds the same logical block address.
Yeah.
And then he saved the location in the file for this one, and he's going back. But that's why I think that you should try to cache a little bit of the file.
There's a stack algorithm that does a lot better, right?
I mean, the stack algorithm, you still have to search through the stack once again that you find the other one in order to find the unique access. So it's essentially doing the same thing, just with the same structure, with a different structure, pardon me. Better than you. So, I mean, I thought about maybe trying to use it, but I would then need to research the same stuff that we've been using, or make my own doubly linked list and try and work from there.
Let's say what you're doing is fine. Let's assume that, okay? So what are you running into any issues?
It takes forever.
Okay.
I started a week ago.
Ah.
It's almost at 2 million accesses in right now.
Okay, then certainly that's not going to work.
I can try something else, but
let's go back, take a step back. I want us to go a little slower and just start afresh. Right? What is the goal of the exercise?
We're trying to get the number of unique accesses between one axis of a logical block address and another.
Right. So that's one. I see that as an iteration. But what is the whole process that you're looking for?
Oh.
What is the overall goal? It's that you have a file, right? You have a large file, and it's basically a list of block addresses, right? And your goal is that for each access, you need to assign a reuse distance number. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, the regular reuse distance one, it's done, and that was fast.
So that's not your goal.
Because all I had to do was save last IO that it was accessed under, and save that into a map, and then just
re-access that and
find out the difference to get reuse distance.
Okay, good. So that's good. I was thinking that was the problem. So that you figured out already.
And that saved it to a file.
Okay, so tell me
what
is it that is the what are you doing currently? Of of the list of things that JSON put up in the paper, what is it that you're trying to get?
The unique reuse distance and then the frequent reuse distance, which is the same thing as the unique reuse distance, but I just don't add things that have a infinite reuse to the set.
Now, let me get this clarified. The unique reuse distance, you've already done that. Is that right?
No, that's the one that's taking forever, and
Let's talk about one of those. Okay, just talk about the unique reuse distance, and then we can talk about the frequent later. All
right.
So the unique reuse distance is the way I see it is the best implementation would be a stack algorithm, where you as you add items to this, as you see items or accesses in your file, you add those to the stack. And what the stack needs to do is that it needs to identify if the item is already in the stack, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that process will also identify the location in the stack. So you would know the reuse distance.
Mm-hmm.
So you are looking at forward or reverse right now?
Technically, I keep both them ordered roughly the same, so that way I can iterate through the files and forward, because I think it's a pain in the butt to try and reverse the with fopen in C. So I have the file reversed at first for the reverse, so that way it reads the same order, but the results are just flipped.
Yeah, okay. So what you can do is do the reverse and implement for the reverse, because the stack is good for that, for the reverse. Because if you see an item that's already in the stack and you know its position, then you know the reverse use distance for the current axis.
Yeah.
So I think that you should use a stack for the reverse use distance.
My own stack that has a couple extra things.
Okay, so you are using a stack then?
No, it's not a stack. It's completely a set and everything else. I was just trying to use something nice from a standard library that will definitely get me what I needed. I could use a stack. What else? No, I'm just trying to think of something in particular. What is a stack other than...
The stack has order in it. It's not a set.
Oh, yeah.
There is order in the stack. And that, I think, is the key difference between a stack and a set. So if you're using a set, you have to actually examine again.
Oh, no, I'm...
To determine in which position you need to...
I think I remember now why I was a little concerned, and it was because with something like that, we'd necessarily have to save not just the information for each local... logical block address, that all of the items within the file are going to have. So none of them will ever really get evicted, I think.
From the stack?
Well...
Are you talking about from the stack or...
In a way, from the stack. They'll just be put on top. Correct?
Yeah.
So essentially, you can have this really large stack and... It could be a memory issue at some point.
It could be a memory issue... But a set will have exactly the same problem.
Well, that's why I do it one at a time.
So there you're training off computation for memory, basically. What you're doing is that you're scanning each time.
At the moment, because I'm trying to not have it.
I would say, for instance, restrict the size of the stack to some large factor of the cache size. Say 10x or something like that. And then you can say, okay, if it's not in the stack, then it's as good as not being there at all. The reuse distance is infinity. So you could make those approximations with a stack, but you can't really do that with a set. I mean, you have to compute anyway.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that one.
Well, actually, no, you can actually do that even with a set, because what you can do is you can stop scanning beyond a certain point. You don't look for the item anymore. And then you'll have an approximate reuse distance with...
That's what I did.
But, yeah, that's why I also have the reuse, is I should know how far away something is, literally number of iterations. So with that, I have -1 represents infinity, so that way, if it's -1, I don't need to go searching for it. I just move on to the next one. because it won't.
No, but the stack will do the same thing, right?
Maybe yeah, if I were in one stack, I would do the same feature, Jess.
Yeah.
Maybe if there's a negative one, I could.
The thing about the set is that you have huge memory requirement with set as well, isn't it? Because you are adding items to the set. And the amount of memory that you need for the set is the amount of items you can potentially scan.
Unique items, yeah.
Unique items you potentially scan. Which is the same size as the stack, because you're limiting the size of the stack as well to get the same approximation ratio.
But with the set, I don't keep the past items. That's the biggest memory trade-off.
No. But you have to have the same amount of memory, because as you start scanning each time, you're going to fill up that memory. And then it becomes zero again. But then you fill it up again, right? Because as you scan items, you're going to keep adding to that set.
Okay.
Right? And if you place a limit on how many elements you scan, you're basically placing a limit on how much memory your set uses.
Yeah.
And that same memory is what the stack is using as well, because it has the same limit.
Yeah.
But the stack is the additional advantage that you don't have to scan each time. Well, you have to. Yeah.
But
you have to in some
but
sense.
But you tend to scan the stack itself instead.
You have to scan the stack itself. So that's why, you know, in one of our original discussions, I said that the best data structure is a hybrid data structure for this sort of problem,
yeah,
where you use a set indexing into a stack.
Yeah.
So you can, you know. I think that that's probably a good approach for you.
I don't know how you'd be able to keep the index as you go.
What do you mean?
Well, let's say you had your stack with items in it, and you had a map that would give you a pointer to
yes.
the item in the stack. How would you know where in the stack it is?
Oh, you keep a number.
You keep the address, right? I mean, you it's an object, right? So you have an address to the whatever the location of the object is, right? So you have a hash. You can have a hash instead of thinking of a set. Think of a hash. You look for the item on the hash. It's a fast lookup, right?
Yeah.
And you have and you find the address, and then you go to the actual value, and you see where the position, right, in the structure. Because you need to have a position, right?
Yeah, the position information, I think that's tricky, because the position needs to be updated every time you add to the top of the stack, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm getting at.
So that is a challenge. It's not straightforward. Because
then you have to adjust everything else that would move.
How are you thinking about this?
I see.
Because then it becomes the same as just going from the top, looking down for it, and then just pulling it out and putting it on top.
Yeah,
and getting the number that you passed by.
There has to be a way to say, here's the thing. What you store in each item of the stack is the count of the number of items that were inserted into the stack until that point.
Wait. By inserted, what do you mean?
For added. Add it to the stack.
By add, do you mean purely something that can be moved even from within the stack to the top? Because then you have the issue of if it's something from under the item or over the item. And then, because that can change the numbers.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I've been trying to think of something too.
No, wait a minute. Before you said it, I already thought about that. I just spoke too soon. Let me think about it a little bit more deeply.
It is a tough problem.
So why don't you keep the so you have the file, right? You have the reference to the file.
Okay.
Right. So you have the line, the address of the line, and you got the address of the line that you're reading, and you know how many things are in between, right?
Well,
how about that?
Unique.
Not unique. Right.
That's what we're trying to get.
Right. Mm. Okay. So I'm thinking that maybe it needs to be something that also tell you for items that have moved from within the stack to the top of the stack, how much was the distance they traveled?
Which is pretty much just straight from the top down the lookup of
How? What was their index in the stack when they got moved up?
Yeah.
And somehow you need a metric that captures that information. So let's say, so then the metric is more about average, maybe two things. One is how many items were added to the stack, including to the top of the stack, including from within, plus another number, which needs to be the average index of the item that got moved to the top of the stack.
You're trying to have
actually it's slightly different. You keep the number of items that have been added to the top of the stack and the average of those numbers for items that were added to the top of the stack. So every item has a number, right? And this number says, when I was added to the top of the stack, what was the total number of items added to the top of the stack? When I was added to the top of the stack, right? But then what happens is eventually that item, you know, makes its way down into the stack, right? Moves towards the bottom. At some point, it gets reaccessed. I need a metric that will capture, how far down that item had moved until it was brought back up again.
Yeah.
Right? So something along those lines.
A lot of the ideas I've had of trying to keep a metric
tend
to involve constantly updating each item that's affected by that.
Yeah,
which makes it... Yeah, exactly. It just becomes the same amount of extra work.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, no, that doesn't work. I mean, updating each item doesn't work on each axis. What you need is something smarter than that, which allows for constant time inserts. Yeah, this is a problem that I have never thought about. So it's kind of interesting and new, right? It's an algorithmic problem.
The biggest problem is just time complexity.
So do you for example, when you look for the reuse distance of a certain page or certain logical block address, you go through a bunch of you start streaming, right? And what happens if, for example, you find the reuse distance of...
Are we talking regular reuse or unique?
Unique.
Oh, okay. I just want to clarify.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're finding all the unique elements between, let's say that you have your two elements.
Yes.
What happens if you find other values for the elements inside?
What do you mean?
So, I mean, what you could do is update the computation for...
Oh, if you mean if I find two items that are reused within the...
Yes.
It's because it's a set, it gets just put into one...
Or at least to update the state of those values, so you can only string through it once. I mean, for example...
Oh, no, I'm not updating as I go, and... Mm-hmm. I mean, I get what you're saying, but, I mean, I iterate from the left side... Entirely.
So maybe, I don't know if maybe this makes sense or not. So
I'm sure it does.
So you have this, let's see, an array of things, right?
We give them numbers.
Could you erase the board, because eventually we'll get to a point where everything will be a big mess.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll get to a point where you'll need the room too.
I'm planning to get a bigger whiteboard.
Oh, no, I was talking about him showing off his idea.
So, you got an array here. And each of these elements here, you can access them in a hash or something.
Okay, so this is a map.
Kind of like a map. Okay. I mean, you have this... this array of accesses from, I don't know, you have 1, 3, 4, 2, 5.
Is this the order of logical block addresses in a thing? Okay.
Yes.
That's all so I figured it might have been,
three,
but
four,
the description kind of got lost.
1. Just to say something.
Okay.
So, and you also got a map. So you got 6 elements, basically. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So you start getting the... So you have a state for each of these elements that you can store in the hash, and you can access it... you can access it in a constant time, right? Because it's a map.
Mm-hmm.
So... okay, so you start reading from here, and you see what's the number of unique accesses between 1 and whatever the state is. So you can keep the position, the last position that you've been checking for the element, position.
So now it'd be 1, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Right now you're here, right? Position. And then you have also the number of unique accesses. Right? So you start reading, you read this element here, and then you say, okay, I've been checking 1 and 3. So
you
far.
Update something in your...
So you need to update, you need to update
the position.
The position.
So let's put it there. Right?
Right.
Because otherwise it's not clear what we're doing. Let's use it as an example as well.
Yeah, just put the numbers down.
Put the number 1.
Yeah.
And write position on top, so that we know what it is about.
So this is like a chart.
Yes. Yeah, I see where you're going with this.
Something that will let you stream only through everything once.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Let's continue.
Maybe... okay, so just... okay, so you start doing this for number 1, because the process is number 1. When you find a 3, you also want to update whatever the position is for the 3. So you say, like, the position here.
No, it's just 2.
It's 2. Sorry.
No problem.
And you say, like, this updates to 1, and this is 0.
No, you're updating 1 as well.
And then that can take quite a bit of computation.
So you could... you can potentially say it's the number of unique accesses for this one until you find the previous one. But
why don't you say the number of unique when this guy was accessed? So put it 0 over there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then we have a running counter of how many unique we've seen so far.
Or should it be 1 including itself?
Sure. Right.
Sure, that makes sense.
Number of unique that were seen at that point in time.
Of course.
When 1 was accessed.
Okay, exactly.
Okay?
That's okay. I've already got my counter.
So you go here, you have a position, the number of unique accesses, which is 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Correct?
Right.
I think the position and unique will differ, start changing at some point.
Right. You need to know if this element has been reaccessed, so you can potentially say, like,
once
access
that,
or something like that.
3.
Or you know that
let's go
values.
Through this exercise. Let's keep
access is the position.
If he has values, it's already been accessed, right? So, okay. So you do 4.
Mm-hmm.
4 and that's 3. And then 2.
Is 4 and 4.
4 and 4.
5 is 5 and 5.
5 and 5.
It's a three.
Three.
Okay, now the now what do you do here?
So the unique reuse distance of three is five minus
no six minus
three, I guess. Because five is already at five.
This
but it's not unique anymore, isn't it?
Right.
So number of unique accesses.
So it'd be five minus two plus one, I guess.
Minus two minus three, right? Five minus three because you're counting.
Well, no, no, no. Your number of unique. You're looking for the difference, right? So it'd be five minus two, which would be
three.
Three, which okay, yeah, never mind. It's just that. I thought you needed a plus one.
Okay, sounds good.
So,
yeah.
So far it works, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, maybe that four itself can do it. Never mind. So if we move on to the four. We now have still unique five.
Can
but
you
not
do
a
day,
here?
But now you
update.
Okay, don't forget. Let's not forget
to update
this.
You update this.
So now instead of two,
so you can
two,
write. You can write the unique. I mean, if you're gonna write results,
do you want results
so,
or one
right?
Last
so if, imagine that you want a list of all these elements and whatever. So you can maybe write it somewhere on a file or something like that, right?
Yeah. Well, when you output it, are you? Okay, so I'm going to guess these were something like negative 1, negative 1, negative 1, negative... This means infinite, sorry.
Mm.
So, because these were all unique, they weren't already in here. And then we have a 3 for this axis. Then we move on to the 4. Our current unique is 5, our position is 7. And so we have 5 minus 3 being 2. And is that right? No...
5 minus 3 being 2. Where are you right now?
We're moved on to the 4.
So 4 is how many unique accesses? 4, right? Or 3?
Three.
Including
3,
three
including
or
itself, so 4 technically.
So it's, so it should be 7 minus 3.
Yeah, so it should be 4.
Hey!
You need plus 1. So.
No, no, no. 7 minus 3 isn't true.
No? 7 minus 3. No, no, no. 5, we do unique axes, correct? Not the position. Or else we're just getting reused.
At 4, the number of unique axes is 3. At the 4 again, the number of unique axes is 3 plus...
What if we're trying to go off the running number of
five.
Unique axes? It's
yeah.
5.
Yeah.
So we do the 5 minus the previous one we saw to get the difference in the number of unique axes since the
right.
Last time we accessed.
Yeah.
Which would only be 2, and we add 1 to include itself,
yeah.
Which will only give us 3, which is not correct.
It's not correct. So there's something wrong with the math here.
Yeah. It's
what
the,
are we missing?
It's the number unique doesn't call into the fact that we could be accessing items that we've seen before in between two numbers. So here the 3 wasn't counted. And if we had, like, a 5 over here, the 3, the 4, and the 1 wouldn't be counted.
Ah, yes.
And that's the problem with this idea. I mean, it's nice, but then if you try and tailor it in some way, you've got to then start adjusting everything that was accessed, before the point that it's not itself.
So what you need is a number that... so it's not just the unique
but the problem then
you, so what if we use the counter?
Well then it's just strip use distance.
The counter and the unique so the counter is since the beginning of time, right? And this unique is also since the beginning of time, and that's the problem. What we need is a way to figure out the number of unique since the previous access, and that's the information we are missing, right?
And so, my thing, like I said, we pretty much just add all of these into a set. Each one gets a unique item for each logical block address, and then I just count the number of things in the set plus one. So the only problem is then I go on to the next one instead of trying to.
And you start
it
all over again.
Yeah. And that's
yeah,
why.
So that's the kind
forever
of the brute force method, which.
But I also try to put a lot of effort into thinking about something that wouldn't run in N squared, and if I figured, okay, same time complexity roughly, and you tend to be, out of my mind at least, less memory, I went for the less memory solution rather than trying to go with something that would include literally everything.
I think the memory is probably not a problem for this.
Okay.
I think compute is more of a problem, given what you just told me. Like, you've been running for a week and nothing, or very little progress has been made.
Yeah.
2 million, almost.
No, I mean, yeah, but last time we did have problems with memory, right? I mean, these workloads are from a server, right? So if you have a...
Yeah, eventually, I mean, we have some really big memory machines. We have machines that have 128 gigabytes of memory. So we can potentially solve the problem, but we don't have cores that run at, like, a billion gigahertz. We don't
have
that.
So, okay, so the time complexity is the issue you want to tackle.
Yeah.
So if you kick another counter, what happens?
I'm just wondering.
Then remove that. Would this continue working? Because it could. This define number repeats, and this define the number unique. Between the last axis to get the actual total number. No, but then if you have like four axes twice, it gets counted twice. Let's 4, 3, let's make this 2. So it just become 5, 4. Okay. The 3 would, just a 3 actually. Okay, so 3 would come over here and it would become 6, 4. Actually, let me put it to its original 2, 2. Okay. So we're at 6, 4. The old thing was 2, 2. And according to that up there, it would be 4 plus 2. Maybe 2 plus 2. Wait, no. This makes sense to me. I'm trying to make sense of something, and I'm not making sense.
Well, let's do the following. I don't think we can come up with a solution quickly. I think this needs to go through some rigorous process, and maybe nothing comes out of it. But I think you got some maybe new ideas today, like that you could potentially follow up on.
Maybe, but there's almost a flaw with everything except for brute forcing the one. The only problem with that is time complexity.
Yeah. So
but there's a lot of information that you would need to know when you're at that point, and you'd need to know that specific to the range that it pertains to.
Right.
Which is part of the problem.
So you already got the information about reuse distances, right?
Yeah. Mm.
By the way, what Jason also suggested how to compute these things in his
he
paper.
Had done this the way he kind of described it, if I remember correctly, was
in the paper, right?
In
the draft.
Mm-hmm. I believe so. Was you have I'm just going to copy these items just no confusion. And so you have the actual reuse distances. I identified it with this. I think it's four. Four. That was mine, actually. So we have something
nine.
Like this.
Last one should be nine.
Oh, is it nine?
Yeah, I think so. Because you're counting the...
Five, six, seven,
eight. I just counted... Yeah, eight. Sorry.
Yeah. And so this is the reuse distance in this
mm-hmm.
direction. Let's say.
Yeah.
So... if we were going from... What was it? Right to left... I might be mixing up how I thought about it, actually, now I'm thinking about it again. Well, he had said something about...
We can look at the paper,
no,
right?
No, Paul needs the paper. My mind, I'm pretty sure, is mixing up some of the stuff that I myself thought about and the stuff that he had said.
So
right now, even I'm getting confused as to where my thoughts were. And I remember I had them fine within this, because he would use reuse distance as to determine... but I think that was for the frequently reused.
Let's see, where is the bimodal?
So, yeah, I'm getting something mixed up in my head.
Wow, I don't have LaTeX on this machine anymore. I don't know what happened. Okay, I'm going to look at the tech file now. Reverse. Oh my god, I can't read this like that. Oh, wait. Did I send it out to my email at some point?
I think you printed it out for me.
Okay, do you have it on you?
No. I have that home somewhere.
I have this bad habit of discarding papers very quickly.
Let me see. Tell me you're swamped. I believe that.
Oh, yes!
Oh.
Wow! yes. Okay. Let me create resistance.
Let's see. Yeah, he's just talking about using a stack. And then just getting it as we use a stack.
Yeah, but I guess the stack is a trade-off in terms of memory, right?
It could potentially be one. But, I mean, yeah, we'd be able to look up its position easily, I guess.
By walking down the stack.
Yeah, but still a bit of extra time complexity that could average out to something close to...
It would be a lower time complexity than what you have right now.
I'll say that much, probably, yeah.
So...
Would it help much? That's a big question.
Depends on how many reuses there are.
How big
right. If the stack is only storing the unique items, so you only walk down the unique items. Whereas here, in your method, you're walking down even the non-unique items from a computational perspective.
I guess, yeah.
So it all depends on how much reuse there is in the trace. So if the reuse...
The reuse distance itself instead of the unique reuse. Okay. I guess that. Could save on some time.
What you are doing seems more parallelizable.
mine, yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that, yeah. It seems like I could paralyze it.
But then memory also blows up.
Because of that.
True.
Yeah. And then I also have...
Still, if you divide 1 week in whatever time, it's going to be... Like, the number of cores is still too much, right?
No, if you have 16 cores, a one-week task could potentially go down to half a day.
That's true. That's true. I mean, we only need these numbers once, so... And then keep them safe.
Don't lose them. That's really important. Don't lose the data. So two directions. One is parallelize what you already have. The other is use the stack instead. Third is explore this. Maybe there is some hidden new famous algorithm hidden, right?
Yeah. That would be interesting. We can publish a paper about the new, unique.
Right. Well, keeping a stack, the complexity of maintaining a stack or inserting an item into the stack is order n, right?
Yeah.
In the worst case.
Order n? Why?
Yeah, what to say.
You put it in
and then you
take something out, right?
No, what I'm saying is that you need to search for if the item already exists so that you can move it to the top of the stack.
Oh, right.
Well,
right. So that
you can simplify the check if it's inserted or not by having map as well. That will point to the particular.
So then you can speed it up a little bit.
At least for just checking if it exists.
If it exists,
and then accessing for removal, also. But it technically wouldn't be important. If for us to check to speed that up, because we would still want to go iteratively to get the position.
Yeah, I somehow feel like there may be a way to. I need to think more about this before I say anything. I'm guessing you've already given it some serious thought.
I've been trying.
This is an ACM programming team competition problem. You can maybe give it to those guys and they may be able to come up with something. How about that? And they will solve our problem for us.
I don't know.
Yeah? Write a really fast algorithm for maintaining an online stack. An online stack algorithm that runs really fast. Right?
goodness gracious.
And the winner of the competition is not the guy who did it the fastest, but the guy whose code ran the fastest.
Oh boy, that would turn an actual competition on its head if that was part of it.
Why not? I mean, I think it's a good brain exercise, right? So and you were mentoring them, so you should just post this question to them. And get them to do your work.
Yeah.
Like the kid the 1-3-2 awards.
I often feel like the people who are completely untrained, like my brain is completely brainwashed at this point. Okay, I think in a very I think with a lot more restrictions than I used to. Because of the supposed knowledge that I've gained over the years. So the people who don't have the knowledge can sometimes come up with like completely new clever directions. And that's why it's important to catch them early and give them the hardest, most difficult problems to solve.
Like the kid that won the 3 Turing Awards, he was in school and he fell asleep and he got to class 10 minutes late and the professor posted the 10 problems that the ten Turing Award problems, the $1 million problems. At that time, that $1 million was a lot of money. And the guy comes in after the weekend and he said, "Professor, I couldn't finish the homework. Out of the 10 problems, I could only solve 3 of them. The professor is like, what? Like, yeah. I mean, I break my brain and I solve 3. And that's how the guy went through to his work. It's funny.
Yeah,
I don't remember the name of the guy, but I remember the story because it's...
So you should catch them early. Make sure that you have freshman sophomore on your team.
I don't know. I using would be somehow updating staff positions. If I can do that, then I'm good. But
you need to catch people who don't know anything about stacks. See, because when they start thinking about the stacks, they're already thinking in a certain direction. You need to find people who don't know anything about stacks, who don't know anything about hash maps, and then give them this problem and see what they do.
Brute force.
Yeah.
No, I mean...
No, they may do something awesome.
They may create a stack. I mean, they may invent a stack in the process, right? It's possible. But anyway, I'm digressing. So you're stuck in this hard place. But besides this, what else are you working on?
I'm stuck just trying to figure out would be good indicators of a preferable behavior that would like to be treated more like Lark versus Arc. And I, so far, haven't really been able to come up with anything that I think is solid.
So you know that Dr. Gui, when the other day I met with him for a couple hours, and we talked about Arc and the behaviors of Arc and the events of Arc. And I mean, he seems to have done some analysis on what is happening when some events happen and things like that, like an analysis on events. So it may be worth sending him an email and talking to him about what you're doing and the logic behind the events and maybe showing him the event maps and stuff like that. Because he was interested about it and he even gave me some suggestions, but I didn't know much in detail what's the state of what you're doing right now. So maybe you can prepare, like some summary and talk to him about it.
Yeah, they did a comparative analysis of Arc. They're, one of Giri and one of his students. And they proved some bounds for Arc. Lower bounds for how poorly Arc can do in the worst case compared to the optimal algorithm.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that in getting to that point, they really had to know the internals of how Arc works. So it would be good.
Sounds like really good.
Yeah.
And he's familiar with Lark and all that stuff because I've been talking to him about it and he read the paper twice. And he knows what we're doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, please set up a time to at some point, and maybe in the next month or so, I would want to have a meeting where we get to present all our findings to Giri as well and his group.
Yeah.
Because those guys are completely focused on algorithms and analysis of algorithms. So it'll be interesting to get their feedback.
Yeah. Sorry, I was laughing a little bit to myself because I thought of... remember how we talked about how we can change the ghost list size of Art? I mean, Lark? But with the thing I had been doing, I kept it set. I could just use one of the ghost lists of Arc as the in the ghost list and just have the other one as... a sort of extension, potentially. Just to kind of keep some stuff that might be a little more recent. So that way, like a B2, I can control its size and choose whether it vicks into B1 or if it will evict something from B1 to grow in size. Or if it shrinks, yeah.
But so isn't ARC already, you know, sizing those lists on its own? Isn't ARC already doing it?
It sizes the lists on its own for L1, L2,
for T1,
and...
T1 and T2, you mean?
Well, technically, both.
T1, T2. What is L1, L2?
I'm sorry, you're right. T1, T2. I'm sorry. In the paper, they refer to L1 being T1 and B1, and L2 being T2 and B2 together. Sorry. So because it went back and forth in the paper, I still have a little bit of, when I talk, sometimes I'll say the wrong one. T1 and T2 is controlled, obviously, by the P variable, which itself is adjusted whenever you access B1 or B2. And so when you do that, it determines where to be, I'm sorry, where P should be by the size of B1 versus size of B2. And
so there is a sizing that ARC already does for B1 and B2.
Yeah.
So you're talking about sizing it independent of that ARC mechanism.
In order to do the LARC mechanism.
Right,
so that way,
then,
when we do state changes, it's
But then
more...
we change the behavior of ARC, because B1 and B2 will no longer be in the control of ARC.
Correct. It's controlled like LARC.
So
I understand.
I don't know if that's the,
that's why
that's then we don't have much clarity on what it is that the end result will be, right? Because there is some ARC behavior that is preserved, some ARC behavior that is not preserved and changed to mimic a new algorithm, maybe. So the hybrid outcome of that will be very difficult to analyze, I feel.
Yeah, it would be.
If we want to change ARC, I think we should do that, right? And if we want to keep ARC as is and put a layer on top, like what Ricardo is doing, I think that's fine too. But to infuse a layer into ARC by changing its mechanism, we are basically changing ARC itself, so we cannot claim that we are preserving ARC anymore. Right, so I just want us to be clear about that. So I guess what then, so you're working on in the direction of there was one thing that you were focusing on in particular, I recall, which is how to change the size of the ghost list. Or was it you or was it Ricardo? You know, are there better ways to change the size of the ghost list?
It might have been Ricardo.
Me.
Yeah.
So right now I'm testing just I was focusing on was mechanism to turn on and off. And compare myself to LARC and turning on and off, and then adding a mechanism testing the mechanism to increase or decrease the size of the ghost list. Because what I then wanted to do is, and Jason made the same suggestion as well, I didn't want to make the mistake of making benefit on one and you know, harming the performance on the other, and didn't know where this happened.
Right.
So I want to do one first, and once I have it, then I want to add the other and
make sense
and refine it. Because otherwise, if I add too many changes at the same time, it's not gonna.
So, what is the latest finding for you?
I haven't made much progress since Tuesday, to be honest.
Okay, but what is that latest finding?
So, the latest finding that I have there, what did we talk about? Okay, so we talk about the table, and we formed the table, and we have...
Yeah, but we don't have the table yet.
right? We found that there were problems with the table, and you were going to do a revision of the table.
Yes. Correct? So we made an update of the table. And
you made an update of the table. Well, I made a few changes, but then those changes are not complete, right? I mean, there were some hints to what a future table could look like, and we said things like, okay, we need maybe two tables, and we may need to split these tables up into two parts each, and that sort
right.
of stuff.
Right.
And talk about, you know, maybe adding another column to describe something. I don't recall exactly, but there's a bunch of discussion that we had on
okay.
Tuesday, right?
Yes, yes.
So I think, yeah, certainly that's one thing you need to finalize.
Yes.
Whenever you get the time.
So I'm going to do the table. I have to do also the analysis on the sizes, of the working set sizes of the...
Yes, so that you can use the appropriately sized caches.
So I'm going to do an MRC for every trace and then choose one and then have a summary graph with the size that I choose for each of the workloads.
Mm.
That's the objective, right?
So you have the MRCs or you're still working on those?
No, I need to make the graphs. I need to actually make the graphs and make the analysis and say, like, okay, this is the size, or maybe I need an extra point. Let's
do you have to write code or you have to run code to get those MRCs?
I have the data, so I have to...
Oh, you already have the data, so you just had to plot them.
I need to plot them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I need to run some other experiments to...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right, a missing point that I think, like, okay, this may be important because it's between this and this, but not exactly.
Yeah.
I should do that, and then that's it. That, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah. I need to invest time in it.
In terms of your algorithm change, the latest algorithm, what are the findings with that so far?
So, the latest algorithm... The latest findings on the algorithm. Well, we are improving. Well, in a bunch of cases, we're improving the behavior on top of Arc and Lark as well. So we need the summaries to actually see for the working set sizes that we want, or that are useful for the traces that fit best, and see what's the summary of all those the best ones that we see. And
so you remember what plot you need to draw, right? I said you draw two plots, one for the Microsoft traces and the other one for the FIU traces.
Yes.
So you,
so I need to
so now you that plot is clear to you what it is that
yes.
So there's no more confusion,
but,
right?
No. Well, I mean, from what I understand, I got the first ones that I need to look at is the for each cache size.
No.
I need to choose, right?
No.
A cache size. How do I choose one cache size? Because...
Okay, we went through...
Yeah, I know, but it was only like 5 minutes and then
okay. So it's not clear then. I mean, I'm willing to explain it 100 times, but you had to tell me that it's not clear, right? Okay, so this, on the x-axis, what you have is percentage of working set.
Okay.
You define cache size as a percentage of working set. And so this is cache size as percentage of working set. So it's 5%, 10%, 15%, so on until maybe 50% or 25%, whatever. Let's say 25%. Is this part clear to you?
Okay, so I need to get the entire working set.
No. You need to get the size of the working set.
Right.
And then, for each workload, you will pick a different cache size based on this percentage. So, let's say you have three workloads, 1, workload 2, workload 3.
Okay.
Size of workload 1 is 10, size of workload 2 is 100, size of workload 3 is 200. Working set size. Okay? So, the cache size... you will use at this point for this specific point, which is 5%, is 0.5, 5, and 10. For each workload, it will be different cache size.
Right.
Is this now clear?
Yes.
So that's why x-axis is not cache size.
Okay.
X-axis is
So cache size is a percentage of the working set, and you write the x-axis as a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Does
okay.
this make sense now?
Okay.
In more
yeah,
processes.
Okay. So I need to run a bunch of experiments.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a lot to run, right? Because...
No, but what I'm saying is that you could even choose these percentages based on the data you have.
Oh, okay.
So for some, so you may not need to run all of them, but you may need to run some of them to fill in the gaps. So sit down with a pen and paper, see what you have, see what you're missing, and then run only those experiments.
And then make this graph.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I understand.
Okay. And then on the, what do you have on the y-axis?
The
miss rate,
right?
No.
No?
What miss rate?
The miss rate for the workload, right? Like, I mean, when you run this percentage, right?
There's not one workload here.
Yeah.
Then you have three.
Yeah.
Right? So you have three different layers, right?
No.
Oh,
you
only
have one line.
Oh, okay. So you have the...
You have one line per algorithm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's average miss rate across all workloads.
Across all workloads. Okay. Okay.
And then you have one line for algorithm one, one line for algorithm two, and so on. So you wrote this down.
Yeah.
You need a book to write this down.
I got it on paper downstairs.
But
I'm gonna... This I understand better. Okay.
But do you see why we are doing this?
Yeah,
the
it
goal,
makes sense now.
The goal is that across all the workloads, we want to take an average number. Because we're looking at the legends, right? You're looking at the legends to see, okay, you know, Lark is doing better than Arc in this case. And the reason we're concluding is that we're looking at the average miss rate across all the workloads. This plot will tell you exactly that information and much more directly.
Okay. And this is in respect of the working set size, so it makes more sense to match them up. And
yeah.
That's why we can do the average.
Correct. Because otherwise, what was happening earlier is that some workloads had miss rate of zero. Because the size of the cache was so large that it, the whole working set would fit in it. For the same cache size, for other working for other workloads, the cache size was really small. And then you have huge miss rate. And we are averaging across zero and huge miss rates. And so what we get in the end is not that meaningful. Looking at it from this perspective makes the numbers a lot more comparable.
This is 5%.
It's your good choice.
And these values are 5% of the working set size, so 5% of tens, 5% of 100, 5% of 200, and I'm gonna fill up the gaps. 5 and 10, and this is like 10%, right? No, 5%. Okay.
Yeah, I'd say just, you know, sit down and think about this plot some more so that you understand it fully.
What's my maximum value for working set size on the x-axis? For percentage of working set size?
I would answer that question, not the previous one. I would say 25%. You can stop at 25.
5 and 5 until...
Yeah. 5, 10, 15, 20, 25. So you have 5 points. Maybe 1% is also a good number. So you could have 1, 5, 10, 15, 25.
Okay, 1%, too.
Yeah. But start with 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, and then, you know, based on how the plot looks like, we might choose a different additional number. Maybe we can do 30, we can do 1, 2. You know, we can. So let's do 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 first.
So, cool. Okay, now I understand this better. I can do this.
Okay, good. And then, okay, so until we have this plot, we really don't know how your algorithm performs. Because what we are doing in the past is averaging across values that are not really comparable. So we have hit rates of 100% and hit rates which are very close to zero, and we average across them, and the average really doesn't help
right
in those situations.
What happens, for example, with these workloads that have the other problem is the working set size were defined as the number of unique accesses, right?
Yes.
So what happens in the cases where we have a lot of streaming and we're never going to accomplish, like, I mean, like the working set size is super huge and the size of the memory should be like...
That's why you have different workloads. And that's why when you evaluate an algorithm, you cannot use just one workload.
Right.
So your algorithm should be good for streaming, should be good for spatial localities, temporal locality, and all of that. That's why you're taking averages across the workloads.
Right, but what I mean is, for example, let's say that it says, like, okay, my cache, since this is the size of the working set, given the number of unique accesses, I want to do 10%. And
yeah,
it's like 100, let's say it's 100, 1 terabyte of
working,
you know,
set size.
Working set size.
Yeah.
So let's say that the size of my cache is 10% of that, which is...
100 gigabytes.
Yeah, 100 gigabytes.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I would need to run the experiments on those super big sizes, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it'll happen, though.
For, like, source 1 or source 2 and those things?
I would guess not. I mean, I don't think you will have a 1 terabyte working set size. I may be wrong, but you can evaluate it.
I don't know.
And
if
you have, like, really large working set sizes, then you may need to do something like, okay, here's the maximum cache size I can actually simulate. I cannot simulate anymore because of memory requirements or whatever. And then your percentage, your largest percentage, will be dictated by your system's capabilities.
Okay. Perfect. Okay,
yeah, this is going to take some time, but do a good job.
Okay. Yes. No, I mean, it's a better evaluation than before, so...
Yeah, earlier we were comparing values that should not be compared. That was the problem. Okay, good. So, until next Friday then. Right? Well, actually, we're meeting today afternoon.
Oh.
For the brainstorming session. You guys
yeah,
know
at 3:30.
Okay? Yeah?
I know this.
The idea is to, you know, throw out the latest things, ideas that you have out there. And let other people think about it too and give you some feedback. And the goal is to identify new directions for the lab, new projects, whatever. Because my primary job is to identify projects and then get money to fund those projects. And so this is kind of the seeding step to that whole cycle. So whatever we come across, whatever we come up with at the end of the brainstorming session or a few sessions, we eventually get translated into projects. That's the goal. And by the way, I should send an email to the whole lab. We have a Turing Award winner today giving a talk.
Oh yeah, I'm going.
At 2 o'clock.
So make sure that you don't miss it.
Yeah, no, I was going there anyway because I saw the description of him. I didn't know. I mean, they didn't say Turing Award.
He got the Turing Award last year.
Yeah, Weiss on his Thursday algorithm class told people to try and go see him.
Yeah,
I was going anyway.
Well, by the way, Steven, you know, if you're in Weiss's class, do mention to him that you're applying for the master's program, and you talk to me about the TA ships.
And talk to Ben.
I've already recommended you for a teaching assistant position with him.
With him?
Yeah, so he's the one who makes those decisions ultimately about the teaching assistant ships. So I've already recommended you. By personal communication. But it would be good for him to know who you are.
Well, that's technically not big of an issue.
Okay.
Well, Kip classes right before, and when it was the first day I was there, Kip decided to introduce me and say, "Oh, he's gonna be awesome," stuff like that. It's like,
yeah. Okay, excellent.
I think, at least I would think that he knows. But
so let him know that you're working with me, and then you'll be applying for the master's program, and and you're looking for a teaching assistant position. Just remind him that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be good for him to know that, because I didn't know that you were in his class. I think this is much better because you are in his class.
I've been there due to a recommendation from Kip.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as in, I chose to try and go into the class because of Kip recommended it.
Excellent.
So, yeah. Oop, papers. So I could see him. Next Tuesday, I've got a quiz. Well, yeah, I guess I can mention that before class starts or after.
All right, good. But I sent in your recommendation yesterday.
All right, yeah, I saw the email saying that you sent it in. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome. All right. See you later today.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. I'll be in the presentation.
Okay.
So,
remind the others in the lab too, please.
Huh?
Remind the others in the lab too. You know, whoever you run into, remind
them. I sent an email to Leo because he said that he was not coming today, but I sent him a message.
About the brainstorming session too?
Right? He was joining a teleconference.
Oh, okay.
But I sent a message like, oh, the guy that's the professor presenting today is a Turing Award winner. Try you sending an email in a few minutes reminding you.
Yeah, I'll send out the email just now.
I think Daniel and Hector are coming. I think everyone else is coming. So.
Okay.
Do you want the door open or closed? Or?
It's open is fine. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.